My name's Helen Wilkinson. I'm from the Story Project, and I'm here in Bundaberg with Lester Lewis, who's also from Bundaberg. Today's date is the 11th of November 2011, and we're in Bundaberg recording with the Story Project. Lester's come in today with a story about finding his birth parents quite late in his life. So Lester, where would you like to start? Perhaps start the story where you began when you were a baby.
Well, I was born in 1949, and at the age of 3 days old, I was passed into as a state ward. And about 11 months later, Mum and Dad, who are my adopted Mum and Dad, come along and pick me up as if you can go to a supermarket sort of thing and pick somebody out, and then took me home. And I've got an older brother who's also adopted, and that's how I started my life. Yeah.
What town was that in, Lester?
In Brisbane. So the first 11 months of my life I was in an orphanage.
Do you remember the name of the orphanage?
I know it was at Wilston.
Okay.
In Brisbane, yes. Yeah.
Have your Mum and Dad told you anything about what it was like for them to come and pick you up?
Yeah, well, Mum has. My Dad's since passed over, but at a very early age I was told I was adopted. I was also told that I was a twin. They thought it might have been a twin girl, my sister, but they weren't sure. Mum had a special way of saying it to us. She said, "People have children, but we chose you." So that's with Mum and Dad, and I think I had a fantastic life with them. I think they taught me all those values and things and raised my brother and myself really well, but gave me those sort of things about life and all those life lessons and prepared me for the future, I guess.
Mm. What was your mum's name?
Connie.
Connie?
Yeah, and Dad's Bill.
Connie and Bill.
Yeah.
Okay. Is your mum still alive?
Mum's still alive. She's 92. And I was in Brisbane this week on business and had dinner with her two nights in a row. And my brother. Yeah.
What's your brother's name?
Eugene.
Okay.
Yeah.
So back to when you were a child, you knew you were adopted from a young age.
Quite a young age. I can almost remember, I don't know when exactly, but I can remember the conversation. And that's when Mum said, we chose you, we just didn't have you, So that was important, I think. But I didn't see it as any real barrier as a child. I guess one of the things I thought of at the time, and maybe as you got older, where you thought about things more deeply, was that, I wonder why I was given up. Wasn't I good enough? Or wasn't I, did they want a girl and not a boy? I mean, because there was two of us, Where was this sister of mine? These are the questions I asked. But as I got older, I think you get on with your life. Mm-hmm. And I guess I parked all that information in the back of my head somewhere and didn't really think about it all that often. One day, as a very mature adult, I went to my doctor and he said, you're starting to get some medical complications and you've got high blood pressure. Tell me a little bit about your family history so I can get to understand your family and that. And I said, I'm sorry, Doc, I can't tell you. I'm adopted. Well, I guess the old saying is he put a flea in my ear. And he said, these days with technology and the internet and all that, you can often find people now that you couldn't do when you were younger. And just left it at that. And it got me thinking, so I guess I started looking and I started delving in into the public records and that. And up until I understand sometime in the mid-80s, you couldn't search too far at all, but the Queensland government opened up a lot of records. So The key thing, I guess, was, you know, the doctor saying to me and sort of giving me a bit of a nudge to be a bit more inquisitive, I guess. And so the first document I found that really opened up Pandora's box, I suppose, was my natural birth certificate. And that gave me a lot of information.
What was it like to find that, Lester?
Well, I actually knew my name.
It was a different name?
Different name, yeah. My birth name's different to my adopted name, which I've used for all my life. So that was an eye-opener. And it said, Twin One. Yeah. So I found out then that I was born at the Brisbane General Hospital, which is what they call... all the old hospitals have been knocked down now with progress, but the Women's Hospital at Hurston in Brisbane. And I actually contacted the hospital there, and after some negotiations and discussions, they actually gave me access to the hospital birth record. And it actually gave me something I'd never known before. It actually gave me my birth weight, and it gave me... the fact that my other twin was a girl.
Mm.
So the story moves on from there, I guess. But that was a second document that was quite interesting. So once I knew my real father, or my natural father's name, I started trying to track him down. Men are easy to track.
Why is that?
Well, unless they've got a criminal nature, I suppose, and they might change their names. Men keep the same name, typically. Yeah. So I actually started going through things like the electoral roll. And I didn't know the family name at all either as well. So once I did that, I found out all the different people in the electoral roll that had the same surname.
Sorry, just to go back, on the birth certificate, without saying his actual name,
yeah,
unless you want to,
yeah,
there was no family name for your father?
Yeah, there was, and that's where I found out that family name, and that was, yeah. So I found my father's full name,
right.
I found my mother's full name,
right.
The fact that I was twin number one.
Right.
Yes. So that then I started looking at things like electoral roll records for Australia, telephone books. I've become a real detective, actually. Yeah.
How were you feeling when you were doing that? Like, what was it like inside to do that?
It was quite exciting, actually, because I've talked to people since that have done that genealogy work and ancestry work, and you're like a detective, and you find a step, And you find some information, and then that leads you to something else, and all of a sudden you've gone up the wrong alley or the wrong street, so you've got to come back down and you've got to start chasing new information. So I found it quite interesting and exciting, to be honest.
What about all that stuff that you'd parked when you were younger, the questions that you had about why was I given up and all those things? Did they start to rise for you?
They did, actually. I started saying, well, okay, well, I wonder what happened here. So I tried to find my mother, and that was difficult. So I concentrated on the father's side of the family.
Difficult because of name
changes? No, because of name change and, what I presume was a name change. So finding my father's family was much easier, you know, and I started... finding a great deal of information out, more and more and more. And the interesting thing, I found out that once you started talking to people, everybody was very keen to help you. Nobody sort of tried to throw any barriers in your way.
Because it's a pretty big thing, really, is it?
I mean, massive.
For someone to come looking for their
mother
and father, you would think people would be helpful.
Yeah, I think inside families it's a bit of a different story. And I have not had a great success inside my father's family as such, his direct family. But I was fortunate in meeting the lady who was his widow. Now, she's not my mother, but she's like another relationship.
Right.
She actually gave me the first photos that I've got of my birth father.
So you did. Your father had passed away.
He'd passed away.
How long before had he passed away?
He died in the 80s, so I missed him by a number of years.
When were you doing this, Lester? I didn't.
I started before I turned 60. So you're looking at almost 3 years ago now.
Okay, so mid to late 2000s.
Yes. 2000. Yeah, mid to late 2000s. Yep. Yeah. So I'd miss him by 20 years, sort of thing. But she was lovely. We arranged to meet, and I wrote to her because I actually found her contact details. Somebody, you know, you get a bit of an inkling that, well, if he's that old, I wonder if he's died. So my next investigation was I'd started checking newspaper records, you know, from the 80s onwards. I actually found his death notice in the paper. I contacted the funeral home and I explained who I was, and I could prove it because I had details of his full name and all that. And they put me in contact with his widow.
Right.
And then we actually subsequently met in face-to-face in person, and it was quite interesting. We actually met in a park. We thought, you know, you'd meet somewhere neutral sort of thing. And it was a massive park on the Sunshine Coast. And my wife and I, Diane and I, were sitting in the park just on a park bench. She walked straight over.
She knew you? Mm. Do you look like him?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. And at this age, at my age now, there's a photo that she gave me when he was sort of, you know, 60s sort of age. And what's the Aussie saying? Dead ringer.
How was that to see a photo of him?
Well, that was the very first photo I'd ever seen of him, you know. I've since done further investigation and I found his army records, you know, in the archives, and I've even got a photo now of him as a young soldier.
Which war was he in?
Second World War, and he was actually up in Papua New Guinea, up in New Guinea, yeah. Bougainville.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to say his name?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I'm not ashamed of it, and I don't think he'd be ashamed of me. The family name is Look, Look. Yeah. I'll tell you another part of the story, if I may. When I went to find out where he was buried, he's actually buried at the Budrum Cemetery. I'd never been there in my life before, and you know, you go into a cemetery, you've never been there, you walk through the gate and you say, I wonder where he is. And I got this feeling to go over there. So I did, and I found him. Big cemetery, and there was a pool.
A pool?
A pool. Yep, something pulled me that way. So, I don't know, there's some sort of message or something. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a disbeliever, but I don't know what it might be. But I got a feeling to say, you must go that direction there.
And so when you saw his grave,
yeah, that was interesting. We had a bit of a talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. His widow was lovely. She was a lovely lady, very helpful, very supportive. And she tried to give me, and this is where it gets a bit interesting too, because when we spoke, or when she spoke on my behalf with an auntie in the family.
Your dad's sister, your father's sister.
Was my father's sister-in-law from a marriage, a first marriage that she'd had. And she said, "Oh, I don't believe this. This isn't true. This chap, be very careful. You read in the paper about these scamming people that are stealing identities. Watch him. He could be one of those sort of people." And my father's widow said, "No, look, I've met him. He looks exactly like Richard." She said, "And I've seen the birth certificate. I've seen the information. No, he's genuine." And that sort of mollified her a bit, I think, you know. But she said, "No, look, I'm sure there wasn't a boy. I'm definite about that. Because when they come home from the hospital, there was only a little baby girl." And that's true. Mm. That's true, because I wasn't brought home. So they said, "And her name was Lorraine." Well, and of course that strangely enough set me on a wrong path then, because her actual fact, her name isn't Lorraine. Her second name is Lorraine. Her first name is Diana. So, yeah, that's what I was saying about you go up some dry gullies and you get some misinformation.
So, from that information, what came next?
Okay, I then tried to find my sister, who I thought was Lorraine. She was supposed to be living in New Zealand, and I had family names and all that, so I tried to track that down, but as I said, in actual fact, it wasn't a name. And to make it more complicated, she was using our birth mother's birth name. Birth family name, not from the relationship. So it was very, very difficult. There was, can we talk about a commercial TV program?
Yep.
We can? Okay. There was a commercial TV program called Find My Family, and I wrote to them and gave them my story, and never heard from them. Never heard from them. And Diane and I were on holidays in Tasmania. And
this is your wife, Diane.
My wife, Diane, yep. Sorry. It's Diane and Diana, which is very confusing, let me tell you. We're on holidays in Tasmania, and I got a mobile phone call from the company that produces Find My Family, and they said, "We'd like to proceed with finding your family for you. Are you still interested?" "Oh, am I interested?" Yeah. So that was the next catalytic thing that happened, and so they commenced doing some work to find my family. Coincidentally, within 3 weeks of me writing to them and then not hearing about it for, as I said, probably over 6 months, I've sort of given up and said, "Well, I was just one of the many applications." When they contacted us, within the same time frame, my birth twin sister, her daughter had written to the family, to find my family, and said, "My mother would like to find her brother."
Ah. So you're both looking for each other at the same time?
Yes, unbeknownst to each other and not knowing each other at all. So they connected us in the end on the beach at Bagara.
Gosh, what was that like?
That was very emotional. I then also met some of her family then. Diana's got eight kids.
Eight?
Eight kids, yeah. And so I met her youngest daughter and also her youngest son at the same time. So that was absolutely fantastic.
Can you remember what you said to each other?
Yeah, I can. The thing that appeared to me is that your life's like a circle. Um, And there's always a bit of a hole there, or a bit of a gap. What was the closing?
And you both had the same kind of feeling.
Exactly, exactly the same. The funny thing about all this is, I do get a bit emotional. The funny thing about this is that all this time, I had this sort of a bit of a wonder if I ever found my twin. Wasn't sort of more worried about whether we looked like each other, but did we think about the same things? Did we have the same sort of values? Were we interested in the same thing? And it turns out that, because just scientifically, you know, you hear about this nature and nurture sort of thing. We'd never met each other, and here we are 60 years old. And lots of common thoughts. And Diane, my wife, says, you probably don't notice because you're too close to it, but she said, even your mannerisms, the way you speak, the way that you sort of emphasise things. Said, you know, if you both cut your hands off, you wouldn't be able to say anything. You know, so we're very similar in thoughts and in likes, food, for liking the different sorts of food and that, you know. So I don't know what that all means in the end, but we're very similar. Yeah.
So there was a strong connection there when you did finally meet.
Straight away. Yeah. So so that was the production. That was Find My Family. The end of that day, they said, we got a surprise for both of you. I said, what else? And they said, we've found your two older sisters.
You didn't know you had two older sisters?
I knew I had them, but I did not have a clue where they were at all. And, of course, same thing. Ladies, females, married, you know. And I found we had two older sisters living in New Zealand who had married and the whole work. So once again, the family name wasn't used and you're looking for people you didn't know.
So you found them?
Yeah, so Find My Family found them and they reunited us two, Diana and I, with our two older sisters, on our 60th birthday.
What a birthday present. Oh, God.
Hey.
What else did you find out about your family from all of this?
Well, we found out our mum, our mother was passed on. Mm. Yeah. We've met lots of extended family now, I'm still doing genealogy research, and I've come back on our mother's side, right through New Zealand, right back through to England and Scotland. And I'm back in around about 1700 and something. On our father's side, the common thing about the four of us is our mother, not our father. The two older girls have a different father. And because my twin sister and I naturally have the same father. His heritage and our heritage... I've traced it back to about 1700 and something, to Canton in China.
China, gosh, unexpected.
Sort of, but depends, I think. I mean, I've sort of got a little bit of a look, you know, some of the features, I guess. But to Guangzhou province, which is Canton in China. And of course I haven't gone any further back past about 1700 and something.
When we were talking before, Lester, you mentioned something of the life of your older sisters. It sounds like your mother had quite a tough life.
Yeah, look, we think she had quite a tough life. My two older sisters spent most of their life as young children, and then teenagers, up till the age of 16, I believe, in orphanages. Mm. Either that or some sort of foster home. My twin sister, Diana, actually stayed with our mother, and until the age of five. And then she was actually placed into an orphanage and foster care, and then until around about the age of 16 too. So when you sit back and, you know, you wonder as a kid, well, how come I was given up? Wasn't I good enough? Did they want a girl and not a boy, or any of those questions? And then you find out at the age of 60 that, well, they actually had a worse life than I had. We become extremely close. We ring each other often. I've been to New Zealand twice since we reunited. One sister's been over here twice, and my twin sister and her husband are coming up for Christmas, New Year. And we're hoping to get our oldest sister over here this year from New Zealand as well. So we're very close. It's we don't talk every day and we don't write every day, but we keep in touch with each other. And we've become really close. I think we're sort of trying to catch up on what we've missed.
We've had 60 years or so.
Yeah, well, our two older sisters are in their 70s. So we talk about, we just talk about the future more so than the past as well. You know, they're cheeky. Bavarian, so am I.
What else have you got in common with them?
My next older sister has a real strong bent for conservation, environment concerns, welfare of wild animals and birds and all that sort of stuff. While we were over there earlier this year, we actually went to a bird release, which I'd never seen in my life before. This is where they actually cleaned out an area from all vermin, and over there it's like rats and mice and sort of animals I hadn't heard of before, like voles and things like that. So they eradicate all the vermin, and then they relocate wildlife and particularly bird life that's never in this part of Auckland, in the country in Auckland. It hadn't had these birds for, say, like 30 years.
So you and your older sister went along to one of these?
Well, she was part of what they were doing, the work, and took us along to the release of these birds that they'd taken from a sanctuary area on an island and put back into the mainland.
And you had an interest in conservation?
Well, I have got an interest in conservation and just animals and that, you know. I think it's really funny when you think about it, but my favourite animal is actually the giant panda. And of course, as it turns out, the giant panda, well, that must be my Chinese heritage. And I didn't know. But anything to do with animals and that, I mean, we just love our dog and, you know, I'm a bit of a softy.
So you've got that love of animals.
Yep, love of animals, love of nature from her.
So, Lester, it's been an amazing journey. What have you learnt from all of this?
I've learnt a lot about my dad. It turns out that he was quite a champion cricketer. I wasn't, so that mightn't have been passed on. But he was also a musician and, played mouth organ and keyboards. And I've got a photo of him, actually, where he was playing keyboards. He was also a dog lover, and he had this little creamy poodle that was in one of the photos as well. So some of that, I think, has been passed on, I think, to me as well. So I'm a musician. I've been a musician ever since I was a kid. I think I owe a lot of that to my mum, my adopted mum, because she still, and still does, sings and whistles and carries on, and all the old songs, the Negro spiritual songs, and that was what I was brought up on. So I've had a lifetime of music and entertainment and done that as part of my life as well, you know. Being an entertainer, an actor, a singer. And I've got a belief that, you know, if I can take people's cares and woes away for an hour or so, I've done well. The other learnings, I think, is that anybody who's listening to this story, I guess, if they say, gee, wow, I've been in a similar situation. I wonder whether I should do this, go along this journey. Look for my birth parents or whatever the situation is, a sister or a brother. I'd certainly encourage you to do so. I mean, it's been the most amazing journey that I've ever had in my life, no doubt about it. There are a couple of cautions, I guess. If you've been apart and never met, or if you've been apart for many years and reuniting, I don't think you can assume that it's going to be, if you like, happy families. Even though our journey's been wonderful and our reuniting is wonderful, you can't just expect that it's just going to happen. The factor that you're birth blood doesn't necessarily mean that the reuniting is going to be successful, and it doesn't mean that it's going to continue. So you've got to work at it, and you've got to be prepared to go forward and put yourself out there and put yourself forward and not sit back and wait for somebody to contact you. You know, because they've had a period of life where they've had a different life. Mm. And as much as you're a blood person and you're a blood relative, you are a stranger. So you've got to build that relationship. You've got to build the trust and build the love. And I would never say to you, don't go and do it. I'd say to you, go out there and have a crack at it. But be aware. That's all. Another thought, too, is that you've built up a very strong and loving relationship with your adopted family. Your mum and your dad and sisters and brothers, if you've got them. You really need to be very careful about maintaining that relationship and reassuring them, I guess, that you know that your love hasn't changed for them, that you still love them the same and even more, because they probably have a question in their mind, well, will it be different now? Yeah, will you not love me anymore? In actual fact, my adopted mum actually asked me that.
She asked you?
She actually asked me that question. She said, well, it wasn't really a question, just made a statement. She said, I don't think you'll love me any less. I hope you don't. And I said, Mum, I couldn't do that. If anything, I love you more. They were my brother and my mum, because they're my main two people I've had for many years. Apart from Diane, my wife, of course, they were very supportive. You know, anything we can do to help you, is there any way we can help you get more information? Mum had papers and stuff which she'd given me. I also got those papers and more once I started going to what was then called Children's Services Department, and which handled adoptions in Queensland. Yeah, so that's another caution. Make sure you maintain that relationship and don't get swept up with the emotion of the new family and, if you like, park your adopted or your old family, I guess, park them in the corner, because they will feel that. So very strongly, I keep on my relationship with both families, if you like. You know, I said earlier, I had dinner with my mother and my brother in Brisbane this week. Twice this week while I was in Brisbane, and it was great to catch up, and they're my family. I mean, and that will never change as long as I live.
Thanks, Lester.